Yo, it's the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. This is Nima Vedati, smack dab in the middle of Central Texas, Austin to be exact, skipping South by Southwest to do this show, the Freedom Fiends. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in the Wormabago. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
This is Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. Why do people email me when they know I'm doing a show? I don't get it.
Maybe they don't know
John,
you're doing a show.
John, I know you're listening, John. John's listening.
Well, he's emailing you because he wants you to answer him on the air, which you're doing. So you're giving him what he wants, Michael.
Yeah.
Stop rewarding the bad behavior.
Okay. Well, he's writing to me about Popcorn Sutton, who's an interesting folk hero who was an American moonshiner who took his own life in order to avoid going to jail on an ATF rap. You know, he was kind of the Aaron Schwartz of liquor. Aaron Schwartz was the Popcorn Sutton of the internet, I'd say.
All right.
Now, who is Aaron Schwartz, for those who don't know?
Aaron Schwartz. I mean, he was an amazing child prodigy genius kind of guy who he helped found Reddit. He did a whole bunch of other things. Didn't he like help the way the internet worked and make it work better somehow?
Yeah. Well, he contributed to RSS feeds, to the existence of RSS feeds. And he also was one of two people. The other is a lesser known guy named Appomatto, who introduced the idea of DNS-based or cryptocurrency blockchain-based DNS.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Well, is it even still called DNS?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if
it maybe had a different name.
You know, dynamic network, whatever. Yeah, numbers, letters. We might need a different name for cryptocurrencies.
It should be DDNS, Decentralized Dynamic Network.
Well, whatever. I know that that my buddy Derek did something with the blockchain a couple days ago that's never been done. It's not getting a lot of attention. I've posted it around a bit, maybe because it's done on Namecoin and not Bitcoin, but it could be done with Bitcoin. Basically, our new version of Meowbit, and he is working his butt off constantly improving it, you know, just all the time, really sinking his teeth into this project, and I appreciate that, and the world will appreciate that. But the latest version of it notifies software updates over the blockchain.
Huh. All right.
Which is
notifies. You don't have to update. It just makes the notification.
It does not yet. It's not auto update. We're not probably going to do auto update, and it doesn't yet have a balloon pop up, which we are going to add. But in the little help menu control about console, it's got red lights and green lights, and you have two green lights if you have the latest version. Okay. With both components, the latest. And if it's not, one or both of them is a little red light. It's never been done. It's groundbreaking. Here's why it's important. There are tons of people out there talking about, and I'm going to do this with the blockchain, and they wave their hands and have these amazing dog and pony shows, and people ooh and ah at Bitcoin conferences, and venture capitalists slip their card into their pocket afterwards, and young ladies want to be with them, and young men want to be them. But most of those systems, and there are like 10 of these projects out there right now, and most of these systems are vaporware. They do not exist, or they have some preliminary code. And a lot of them have like offices and funding and secretaries and teams and org charts. And Derek and I are just two dudes. And like, okay, here's what Derek did. The free speech me thing on before that, like, took 8 or 10 guys contributed to it, mostly one guy. But, you know, you look at the GitHub listing, like, 8 or 10 guys did it, and it took them, like, 9 months or a year. Derek, you know, I guess stood on the shoulders of giants, but didn't use any of their code, just, like, took the idea, made it bigger, made it system-wide for Windows, and did it in a week, man. Derek did this in a week, and then, like, in the next week, he added a feature that's never been done with a blockchain, as far as we know. We've posted it around a bunch and said, hey, if this has been done, let us know. But, yeah, it's basically, it's more secure than the way it's usually done with a push, you know, like when it says, time to update your Microsoft, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, this is, it's done over the blockchain, and it's a new use of it. And people are constantly talking about, like, well, we could do this with the blockchain and deliver flying pizzas and pigeons. And it's like, but it's all just talk, man. And Derek did it in 1 week. Man, yeah. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, man. That is amazing. You know, there's room for both. I mean, I think you have to dream big and be visionary. But there also needs to be people out there tinkering and testing and doing. And if that means doing small things at first or things that seem small at first, at least you're pushing it. You're working it out. You're exercising the blockchain. Make sure your blocks rock, kind of a thing.
Yeah, it's kind of like Derek and I are pushing something, Meowbit from Meowbit.com, that is, okay, it's like, let's say it's the carburetor that gets you 1.5 times as good of a gas mileage, which is stunning. And then there's other people saying, we're going to build the rocket car roads of the future. And that looks bigger and brighter, so everyone oohs and ahs at that. But Derek actually did it, man, and my hat's off to him.
Yeah, yeah. For free. Well, not for free, but...
I've paid him a bit. I've actually only broken even on this whole thing. Of all the dot bit work I've done, working 90 hours a week for about a month and a half, going on 2 months, you know, a month and 3 weeks here. And yeah, I have not made a cent, literally.
That's okay, though. You're building the roads, man.
I know. I know.
Yeah. Worms.
Yeah, worms. So this lady who wants to kill kids and is wearing a tie with dead kids on it.
I don't think she wants to kill kids.
I know. She wants the politicians to do something, and the solution they're offering, which I'm assuming she likes. Let's not bury the lead. What's going on in Maine?
Yeah, okay. So the lead was
which is where Derek is, here, but
in this Al Jazeera America, which apparently Al Jazeera America is kind of up in their game trying to compete with CNN, and they're probably better at news.
No, they're trying to compete
right
with Russia Today now that no one will look at Russia Today because Russia's
being
horrible.
Well, I don't think Al Jazeera is a state actor. Russia Today is owned by the Kremlin.
But a lot of people looked to Russia Today for American news because ironically, I mean, literally it's connected with Pravda. You know, I mean, when I was a kid, they were like, oh, that's got less truth in it than Pravda. And they'd teach us in school about like Pravda is the state newspaper in Russia and it has it's all propaganda. And actually Pravda probably has more truth about America in it now than American news. And Russia Today for a long time totally did. They probably still do about America, a lot of whistleblowing stuff. And Adam Kokesh used to work for their TV channel. But they, they're not trustworthy anymore to most people because they're helmsman.
The Ukraine crisis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Anyway, so Al Jazeera buried this lead. It's about the new heroin epidemic, which I've heard little things about here and there, but they sort of do this full-blown comprehensive thing on it. But I think one of the most startling things to me, which could have been its own spin-off story or its own headline, is there's this drug, apparently, that will, I guess, bring you back from an overdose. What's it called, Michael? Narcon is one of the brand names for it.
Oh, and I missed this one part, though, about Popcorn Sutton. Today's the anniversary of his death.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's why it was relevant.
Yep.
Oh,
yeah. All right.
Okay. Big ups to Popcorn Sutton.
Yep. Kind of looked like Ben Stone. I've seen him.
Fair enough. Right. Fair enough. Anyway, this governor in Maine, Governor Paul LePage, has blocked access to the life-saving drug that brings heroin overdosers back to life.
Now,
basically, how
does he block access? Like when the EMTs show up at an OD, does he run out and knock the syringe of antidote out of their hand?
I don't think he does it like that. It's not super clear. Apparently, he vetoed a bill that was going to widen access. And then there's other places in the region, in the New England region, that have been going the opposite and making their first responders be required to carry it with them in case they do respond. Doesn't say exactly how he's blocking access other than preventing new access or widening access. But I guess still, if you're blocking widening access, you're still blocking some kind of access to it. But he's apparently anti-it because he's been quoted as saying the drug provides a false sense of security that abusers are somehow safe from overdose if they have a prescription nearby. So it's like saying we need to ban airbags or keep airbags out of cars because teenagers drive recklessly. And if they do drive recklessly, I'd like them to die as punishment.
Yeah. It's exactly like that. And I actually have some personal experience with this. You know, this guy's saying, I don't want to encourage drug use by allowing one of these syringes of this life-saving antidote opiate blocker to be nearby. I used to be a heroin addict. I'm coming up on 20 years clean here in July. And thanks. And I used to keep a syringe of that antidote nearby. I actually kept it in my room over the door frame to my room, like on the little ledge there, a capped syringe of Narcan. And anybody who partied in my house, which is what we call doing heroin, I would say, hey, there's a syringe up there. If anybody ever falls out, which is what we called ODing, just stick it. Don't even look for a vein. Just stick it into a muscle and squirt it all in, man. It brings you back from the dead. It's an opiate blocker. And literally what it does is it like sticks the key in the lock of the opiate receptors, but doesn't turn it to get you high. It just like fills the hole so no more opiates can re-up into there. And it will bring a junkie who's OD'd back to life like a zombie being reanimated. And not only will they be alive, they will be not high and they will be dope sick wanting more dope. It's that effective that immediately. And the reason I had it was I went to this place called the Haight-Ashbury Free Clinic, of course, to get off drugs. And they used to give me something. They had something that was kind of like Anabuse for alcoholics, which is a pill you take that makes you sick if you drink. And this, they gave a pill called Trexone, which didn't make you sick if you shot dope on it. It just made the dope not work. And you had to have 3 days clean before they'd give it to you or you'd get sick. And basically, it was the same drug. I looked it up in the USP, you know, the big book of drugs, United States Pharmacopoeia, that a drug addict friend of mine who'd been a nursing student and dropped out had on his shelf.
Of course.
And literally, like, this, and you just cooked it. You cooked the pill in a spoon. Well, we're going to lose stations over this. We're talking about saving lives here. I don't care.
That's really what it is.
Yeah. And you'd cook it in a spoon with water like dope, and you put it in a filter it, put it in a syringe, and it acted. It was the same thing that paramedics carry for ODs, or in some places in Maine are not permitted to carry. It saved my life. I would be dead.
Literally.
And if I hadn't had that, yeah, I'd literally be dead. A girl I know would literally be dead. And I wouldn't have stopped using heroin. Like, he's saying, oh, it'll encourage, you know, people think, oh, it's cool. I can. No, I would have done it anyway, and I'd be dead. Right.
And some people who call themselves tea partiers, who are supposed to be small government, say that you can't, say that you should die over that. They hate human life that much. I'm talking to you, Governor Paul LePage. We'll be back with more Freedom Fiends in just a bit.
You can call in. We're going to take calls in the next segment.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back, just as soon as this drone is out of range. Brink of Freedom is a community-based network and magazine whose mission is to provide you with the information you need on your walk to freedom. From homesteading and gardening to tactical and firearms, Brink of Freedom provides everything you will need to gain the knowledge to be self-sufficient. If government doesn't like it, Brink of Freedom will cover it. Come share your knowledge and gain the knowledge of industry professionals within the community. Become a premium member and gain access to unlimited content and discounts on products and services from our merchants. Use the discount code FIENDS at brinkoffreedom.net.
Yeah, so I am Nima Vidati. This is Freedom Fiends. We've got Michael W. Dean. Michael, I put it to you that drug warriors want to abuse people who were abused as children. And my point is this. There was this adverse childhood experiences study. A lot of people in the Liberty Movement have talked about it. I'm reading an article about it right now. And in this study, they found that a kid, I think in this specific instance it was a boy, with four or more adverse childhood experiences, which means traumatic childhood experiences that they can remember, they can talk about, you know, sexual abuse, physical abuse, verbal abuse. If four or more things are rememberable that you can report in one of these studies, these boys were 46 times more likely to become IV drug users. So a lot of people out there who are addicts are just trying to self-medicate for experiences they've had in the past. They're sick. They were abused. They're victims. And they're just doing what they can to deal with that. And I'm not saying that it's healthy, but I'm saying that what they need is somebody to help them, not somebody to prevent a life-saving drug from them, not somebody to beat them up or shoot them. What do you think, Michael?
Well, I only had two traumatic childhood experiences, so I think that's wrong. And I would also say that I don't think you should think of drug addicts as victims, man. Drugs are fun, and if you do a little too much, you can get off them. It's possible. You know, I'm a libertarian. You know what that means, Nima?
What?
It means I think that heroin should be sold in vending machines as long as the vending machines are privately owned and operated and untaxed. And I think that in a free market, there'd be a vending machine next to that that would sell naltrexone in a syringe for emergencies.
So you don't think there are people out there who are addicts because they're self-medicating traumatic experiences?
I think there are. I mean, my study is not academic. It's having attended thousands of meetings and hearing stories of thousands, literally thousands of addicts. Like, I went to about six meetings a week for about 4 years, and then I went to about two or three meetings a week for about 10 years. And I haven't been to a meeting since 2006. I'm still sober. I'm happy. I'm healthier than ever. I'm not recommend someone just – I do recommend meetings. They can get people clean. Some people need something more than that. They need some kind of outpatient or inpatient thing. But, I've listened to thousands of stories of people telling what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And a lot of them involved abuse, but I would say the percentage isn't that much higher than people who never had drug problems. I've listened to a lot of people who were not drug addicts tell their life story too, because I'm a listener and a talker, and I always have been. Before I had a radio show, I just talked to people, man. I've been doing this my whole life. You know, it's kind of like sometimes they get some big name or some politician and give them a radio show, and those usually do poorly because they don't usually stick with it. I've been working to this my whole life because I've been walking up to strangers and talking to them and listening to them my whole life.
Okay. Well, I guess then maybe the point you're trying to make is it even relevant then? It doesn't matter why you're an addict or why you use drugs. Does that warrant you getting abused by police and politicians?
No, it does not. I guess what I'm making fun of in a roundabout way is spending government money on studies that are probably biased, and even if they're not – the results of them are used by politicians, regardless of whether they support or do not support the claims or the tyrannies the politicians are trying to put into law. They'll take those stats. What is that thing they say? Like, there's lies, damn lies, and then there's statistics. It's a Mark Twain quote. It's pretty accurate, you know?
Yeah, but I don't know. I think there's something to be said for scientific studies. I mean, yeah, you got to take them with a grain of salt, and there could be –
Yeah, I'm not anti-science. I want to say that. I just think that science is one of the most abused
– Right, and we've had that discussion before about big science that you can Google in our archives at freedomfiends.com. Science can be
– I mean there's where's the counter study done that's not done with the involvement of a politician and a pharmaceutical company? You know, if you tried to do a heroin addict study in your garage, you know, if you tried to do peer review on your own like you can do with software, they'd shut you down, man. You can't do it. So basically you have to trust the science that comes from government-funded universities with agendas, government-funded studies. A lot of them are paid for and pushed for.
Well, I don't know if this one was government-funded. It's from California's Kaiser Permanente insurance program.
Let me tell you this. It's hard to say if that's public or private, man. It's a giant healthcare corporation. They actually, I think, pushed for Obamacare. Something that
we'll
big.
We'll have more when we get back from the jump here.
And you can call in at 1-855-660-4261. That's 1-855-660-4261.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. You know, without the Star Trek communicator, we wouldn't have cell phones or computers that fit in your pocket. Because envisioning the future is the first step to real groundbreaking changes in our lifetime. That's why I love Scott Beezer's webcomic, Quantum Vibe. Quantum Vibe has allowed me to more clearly envision LibPair, or Libertarian Paradise, and help me work toward it. Who'll build the roads? You and me. Who'll draw up the blueprints? Scott Beezer in Quantum Vibe at BigHeadPress.com. That's BigHeadPress.com.
All right, Freedom Fiends. This is Nima Vidati, smack dab here in the middle of Texas, deep in the heart of Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in the wilds of Wyoming. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
I'm not saying that Kaiser Permanente are baby killers. However, all right. this article we're reading says that they on Wikipedia, which let's see what the Los Angeles Times says that they did. Okay, I was criticizing them just like yeah, some study, some smart people trying to tell me what I don't believe to be true from my personal experience of hearing thousands of people talk about their addiction and how it came to be. First of all, and I was just kind of guessing, like, yeah, this is probably some government-funded study, and it sounded like I didn't like science or something, which is not true. I just don't like science with an agenda. All right. This is from the Kaiser Permanente stockholders portfolio. Their research work is funded primarily by federal, state, and money from other non-Kaiser institutions. Read this measles vaccine project participation paragraph from the Los Angeles Times.
According to Wikipedia, between June 1990 and October 1991, Kaiser and the Los Angeles County Department of Health, Johns Hopkins, the CDC, carried out a clinical trial of the Edmonton strain of the measles vaccine. The Los Angeles arm of the trial involved 1,500, mostly black and Latino babies. Other arms ran in Haiti and several African countries. The aim was to induce immunity to measles earlier, as in cases young children have been causing alarm. The trial was ended early when increased mortality appeared in other countries. Inadequate consent had been obtained in that parents were not informed of the vaccine.
Ugh.
So that's kind of awful. I mean, especially the parents not informed part. I think that's the nut of it.
You missed the last paragraph. This raised concerns over U.S. government department ethics and occasioned an apology by the CDC, who ascribed it to an administrative oversight.
Oh, man. Yeah, so, I thought I'd gotten
the
good stuff.
Those brown babies died. It was an oversight. That person... Yeah. And like, did he was even fired, sued? No.
And that's airbrushing barbarity, isn't it? Increased mortality.
Yeah,
you mean killed kids,
killed more babies. More babies. I, you know, that'd be a nice way to call Obama and all politicians baby killers.
Killer.
Just
yes.
say, Mr. Obama has increased infant mortality in specific regions where he's dropping drones on wedding parties.
Yes.
Yeah,
he has expedited the decomposition of humanity.
He's not dropping drones. He's dropping bombs from drones, although missiles. But actually, a few drones have dropped, too, and who knows where they went.
Yeah, in Iran. Yeah. aren't Hellfire missiles kind of like drones anyway? I mean, they're guided. They're remotely guided.
Yeah.
So.
They're the drone within the drone.
The drone within the drone. The drone in the machine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Want to give out the number? We want to give out the phone number.
That's right.
If you're a heroin addict and your life has been saved by black market naltrexone over your doorframe, or you just want to chat about anything, Kaiser Permanente or any other aspect of your life. Oh, they are. Okay. They're an HMO, and we know like what people think of HMOs. And I'm not gonna say anything bad about them directly because they have more lawyers than most HMOs have doctors probably. But they are the largest HMO in America. So tells you everything you need to know. If you know,
I told my wife
HMOs.
I'd pay for her cancer research out of pocket. No HMO.
What?
I'm kidding.
Who has cancer?
I was trying to do a no homo, but a no HMO.
Who has cancer?
Oh, my wife had melanoma.
Ah, did she get rid of it? Okay, you're burying the lead there, man.
She did. Well, I thought I already mentioned this.
Yes, no, you mentioned it to me, not to the audience.
I did not mention it on the air.
There's about 100,000 people in this room with me. I know we just feel like we're talking to each other because we do this all the time on the phone.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
How's your wife?
She did. She had it wasn't even a stage. It was like they call it in situ. It was just a tiny little mole that came back malignant with melanoma, which is the scary one. I mean, there's other types that are less scary, like basal cell. But they chopped it out, and it's healing up. And we just got to go back in a couple months and make sure everything still looks good. But, you know, this kind of pushes me to need to get some kind of job with insurance, which will then end up costing like way too much Obamacare, et cetera, et cetera. You know, in some kind of free market system,
it would be just another expense, you know. And I might have some insurance on it that would cost about as much as car insurance to pay for in case it was dangerous and we needed some kind of major medical expense, like chemo or something. But no, that's not the case, man. Since healthcare is so heavily subsidized, it costs so much. Same thing with higher education, man. You want to know why your tuition increases all the time? It's because the government pays for it. If the government said they would pay $10 for everybody's hamburger every day, hamburgers would obviously cost more than $10. And that's what they do with healthcare.
Yes, they cost $12.
They'd cost $12, exactly, because the hamburger seller would know, well, we can get at least 10, so we got to make more than that if we're going to be good businessmen.
And they sell them for $2 now, so they would add, $10.
Right, so they would up the price.
So did we give out the number? We've been teasing that we're going to give out the number, and I gave it out quickly as we're going.
We're teases. It's 1-855-660-4261.
That's 1-855-660-4261. Limited time offer. Call the Fiends now. And that's if you're listening live, which is it's noon 40 in Central Time.
So if you're saying that childhood trauma doesn't have any statistical significance in whether or not you'll be an addict or stay an addict, do you think there is any pattern you saw in talking to thousands of addicts in your AA days?
Yeah, I think a lot of them were really bored, man. I think a lot of them – well, it's hard to say, you know – Stefan Molyneux has all sorts of statistics, and he would instantly ask anyone who's had a drug problem if they had a bad childhood. But I think according to him, too, everyone's had a bad childhood because – and, you know, in a way, probably everyone has because most parents don't have any knowledge of how to raise kids. And actually, right. I mean, the thought of parents reading books even on child care didn't exist until Dr. Spock's baby book, which came out in the mid-60s.
Well, and there's so many books.
Yeah.
It's easy to get books with horrible advice. I remember we were just book shopping at Half Price Books before we had Lily, and one of the books was like A Dad's Guide to Raising Daughters. And it had, you know, lovely pictures on the front, and she thought, oh, sweet, you should read this. And I just thumbed through it, and there was a whole section on disciplining your daughters and how you had to cause them pain or else they won't remember.
Yeah, I mean – and regardless of what, you know, we on the Fiends pretty much think it's a bad idea to smack kids because you are giant and they are tiny and they can't defend themselves. And it basically teaches them.
Teaches them to respond to physical violence.
Yeah, with violence.
Nothing but deference and submission, which allows the state to use that fear to control everybody.
Yeah. And I'm sure there are people listening who think spare the rod, spoil the child. But here's what I'm saying about baby books, too. If you believe one of those things or the other, and they're pretty much diametrically opposed, you can find shelves full of baby books you could buy giving either advice. So, not all the baby books are right because it's a big thing. Right. A lot of parents, they're going to have a kid, they freak out. They're like, what do I do? And everybody says, you should read this book. You should read this book. People give them books. You know, there's so much advice out there. But what you have to realize is before about 1965, there was no advice or any training for mothers, you know, for anything, for parents. It just didn't exist.
Some people would probably say that that's what religion and culture kind of did. But religion and culture sometimes taught that your child was full of demons and you had to beat the demons out of them. And they had original sin and all this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think kids are born with sin. I don't buy that, man. And I'm sure if you're a Christian and you're listening and you disagree with that and want to call in, you can call in at 1-855-660-4261 and tell us why we're wrong and tell us why you think you should beat kids and beat the devil out of them and why they're born with sin that needs to be addressed. Yeah.
If we're talking about theology, I'd probably buy the Ben Stone line, and given it's completely biased, why I buy it because it confirms my biases. But Ben Stone's thing is the original sin. If you read, is it the Book of Genesis or whichever one has the Adam and Eve story? The original sin was them eating the fruit of the knowledge of good and evil, which basically sounds like they were the ones deciding what was wrong and right. They became the lawmakers. So the original sin was instead of following natural law that God provided in the Garden of Eden, Adam and Eve took it upon themselves to decide what was good and what was evil. And isn't that what you're doing when, as a parent, you judge the actions of your child as deserving of physical abuse? You're committing the original sin then, not the child.
I think that kids are without sin. And I think that they're without any morality. I think they're a blank slate. And Jimi Hendrix said it really well. He said that, you know, drug-addled swinger Jimi Hendrix said that children are perfect until they get their parents' fingerprints all over them. And I would say not just their parents, but society too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, society has given parents their own biases.
It's the state. It's the government. And, you know, before the government, it was the church. And I don't hate religion. I hate anything that acts like the state. And for most of its existence, the church acted like the state and murdered people and tortured non-believers and had specific guides on how to cut various body parts off while reading scripture to them to make sure they're saved after you murder them slowly.
Right, yeah, right. Man. And it's fashionable now to point at ISIS, you know, the Islamic fighters who want Syria and Iraq to be one nation under some kind of Sharia law. It's fashionable to point to them as awful and backwards and horrible, and I won't argue with that. They apparently live-tweeted somebody getting their hand cut off, a thief getting their hand cut off, was live-tweeted, a Twitter first, right? But 100, 200 years ago, 300 years ago, there were Christian cultures that were drowning people for believing in a third baptism or a second baptism. And they called the drowning the third baptism.
Yeah. You know, why do you think that people speak Spanish in so many countries on this globe? It's because Spain went around murdering people and saying, "You will worship my God and have my babies," as one comedian put it, you know, and speak my language. You know, why do they speak Spanish in Portugal? Not in Portugal, in Brazil. You know how far Brazil is? Portugal was a bad actor too and all that. Yeah, but you know, think about how many countries. Think about Mexico. Why do they speak Spanish in Mexico? It's so far from Spain. Spain just went around murdering people for the church, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Or at least that was the justification. And it was the church acting like the state. I mean, it wasn't. I don't think you could point to them and say, "Oh, they're upholding Christian values," or "they're upholding the doctrine of Jesus" when they say the sword or your allegiance to Christ. You know, that's obviously not something Jesus
would
do. Who would
Jesus drown? Right. Nobody.
We'll be back, friends.
Friends.
Listening to Freedom Fiends, not your grandpa's talk radio.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges start a conversation with your neighbor or your doctor or your family or your school. Now there's teachers and lawyers and business executives, and they all wear shiny badges and they all reject the state. Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges show the world that you reject coercion and aggression and oppression by the state. Shinybadges.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
All right, thank you for joining us once again on the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I'm Nima Fidati. We've got Michael W. Dean as well. Now, I asked you, Michael, well, have you noticed a pattern in who becomes addicts in all the thousands of addicts you say you've talked to in your AA meetings, etc.? You said boredom, you know, if anything. And there actually was this interesting study that I think I also heard first from Molyneux called the Rat Park Study. And this was actually a response by a Canadian psychologist, Bruce K. Alexander. He was responding to a bunch of other experiments where they had rats in cages that would take a bunch of drugs and just keep taking the drugs and keep taking the drugs. And he said that only shows that severely distressed animals, like severely distressed people, will relieve that distress pharmacologically if they can. So what he did as a response to that was he built a rat pair, a rat paradise. He called it the Rat Park, and it was
What state was this in? Where was this? What college?
This was Simon Fraser University.
Where's that?
In British Columbia, Canada.
So Rat Park, BC is the name of the town.
Rat Park, BC, yes. And he built a – it was 200 times more floor area than a normal laboratory cage. There were 16 to 20 rats of both sexes in residence. Abundance of food, toys, balls, wheels.
Rat pair.
Enough space for mating, raising litters. And apparently he took these rats that he had kept for 57 days in cages in bad conditions and given morphine hydrochloride. He let the rats loose in the rat paradise and gave them a choice. They had a choice between plain tap water and water laced with the same morphine. And he says, for the most part, they chose the plain water. He was quoted as saying, nothing that we tried produced anything that looked like addiction in rats that were housed in a reasonably normal environment.
Did he try the same thing with rats that were bored and didn't have all the bells and whistles and toys?
He did. He had a control group with rats isolated in small cages, and those rats did consume much more morphine. And in this and other subsequent experiences, he did or experiments that he did. So I would say that that's boredom, right? If you're a rat and you're in a tiny cage,
here's
with
my,
nobody else.
Here's my problem with science. Like, first of all, like I don't know anything about that organization. They probably have not increased infant mortality. at least I don't know that they have. The other one I can discount easier because I know they have. Here's the thing. Politicians would take that set of data and say, we must spend money to keep kids from being bored. That is absolutely what they would do with that data.
But that's not a problem with science. That's a problem with the state, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's
and
a,
you can
well,
also you can also know how bad the environment is that apparently two major science journals, Science and Nature, rejected it. And it appeared in a smaller but respectable journal.
I also don't know how much rat experiments with behavior scale up to humans. I think in a lot of cases with pharmacology, they do with pure medical things because rats are chosen for research for a bunch of reasons. One, they're cheap. They breed quickly. They go through many generations quickly. But another one is they respond to a lot of medicines the same way that humans do. But this is not just medicine test. This is a psychology test and behavior. And rats behave quite differently than people. I also think
I think the similarities that people point to as one of the reasons is they're omnivores and they're mammals. So like us, they have that omnivore's dilemma and their brains are set up to that, to respond to certain things in certain ways.
But I also think that even if you could morally replicate this test with humans, which you could not, well, you could by had them volunteer, I guess. But I don't even know if a controlled environment test would have that much data. Here's what I'm saying. Like, I think I know more than scientists because I've talked to thousands of drug addicts as a peer. And they talk to people who are not a peer differently. Put it this way. I went through a bunch of outpatient programs, and people with PhDs in, you know, addiction treatment did not get me clean. I got clean by talking to the butcher, the baker, and the candlestick maker. You know, I got caught to quote the AA book. I got clean and also sober by talking to people who had no advanced degrees, had never done any medical research, didn't have any available to them, and had just been through what I've been through. And they just looked across the table, across a couple coffee cups, and talked to me as a peer. Man, they were not looking down at me. They were not pleading up to me. They were not studying me with a lab coat and a clipboard. I'm not anti-science. I just think that you can't point to a study and say, this is the definitive answer at all.
Yeah, obviously.
And I think, and you're not doing that, but a lot of people do that, not just politicians.
I see. But don't you think there's something to the fact that you're still sober and you're in an environment that's much different than the environment you're in?
I'm in rat pair, man.
You're
morphine.
You're in worm pair.
That's why I don't leave, man. I'm under house arrest voluntarily.
There you go. We'll be back with more fiends in just a bit.
More fiends in our water.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on sheep, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelps from Death Clocks, and you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yo, it's the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. How's everybody doing today? I guess I'll stop tweeting and start radio showing. How's it going, Mr. Dean? Mr. Dean? Oh, he's busy tweeting, too.
Eating crickets.
Eating crickets. Okay, that's different than tweeting. That's chirping, yes. Eating crickets and sending me hate mail from people upset about Kaiser Permanente. You're on a crusade against these guys, aren't you, Michael?
I'm not against these guys, especially when you read the part about that they spend more money on attorneys than God or something. read what I just sent you.
All right.
Well, I clear the crickets out of my craw.
We'll clear the crickets out of your craw. What, do you buy these in bulk? I thought you were joking about the crickets. Are you still joking or is this a real thing?
No matter what I'm eating, I'm going to say it's crickets.
Ah, see. Okay. Watchdogs have accused Kaiser of abusing the power imbalance inherent in the arbitration system. Kaiser engages in many cases, whereas a customer will usually engage in just one, and Kaiser can reject any arbitrator unilaterally. Thus, they can select company-friendly arbitrators over those that rule in favor of customers. As a large organization, Kaiser can also afford to spend much more on lawyers and orators than the customer, giving them more advantages. In response to criticisms, Kaiser established an Office of Independent Administrators in 1999 to oversee the arbitration process. The degree to which this is independent has been questioned. In order to contain costs, Kaiser requires agreement by plan holders to submit patient malpractice claims to arbitration rather than litigating through the court system. And you see this a lot, I think, with giant corporations. You have to often sign an agreement. When you sign a contract with them, usually there'll be a clause about how you submit to arbitration rather than taking
any disputes to court. And they pick the
arbitrator. Right.
Yeah.
So that kind of brings up the devil's advocate argument, Michael.
Libertarianism?
Yeah. In LibPair, we tend to say that, things should be settled by private arbitrators. We don't need some kind of monopoly court system. We'd have a competing court system of arbitrators. What do you say?
I say that in LibPair, there would be a lot more competition against your healthcare plans to where and your providers to where – You could include in your decision-making process what they do with arbitration and what their record is. More importantly, what their record is with arbitration.
Right. And I think the power imbalance they talked about at the beginning of that paragraph, that's a power imbalance because it's caused by the monopoly, quote, criminal justice system, which is indeed criminal. Because you have that, that's what people rely on. So when the average person thinks of suing somebody or doing some kind of litigation against a large organization, what they're thinking of usually is taking them to some kind of municipal court or state court or all the way to the Supreme Court. They say, or something like that. They don't tend to think of arbitration or arbitration companies. So there's really can you name one arbitration company?
No.
Can't name one.
Kaiser. It has the word Kaiser in the name. I know it's a family name, but it's kind of like czar, It's
right,
Lord
right.
and Master Healthcare,
Yeah. So I don't know. I think that that's a function, the fact that we don't know who these are. And that's how you know that there's not really a whole lot of competition going on. In the marketplace, when you see actual competition, people will be fanboys of one company or another. And they'll be on forums saying, oh, well, I prefer Apple, but because of this, and that. Or I prefer – well, just now, Brian Sovereign retweeted something from Harry's Shaving Club kind of a thing. And I was like, oh, well, I use Dollar Shave Club. Let me look into this other thing and see what they offer. And they click on it, and they call their product the Truman Set, and their name is Harry's.
Ew.
So I'm trying to tweet, I will never use your stuff, because you're named after Harry Truman, the war criminal. I'll stick to my Dollar Shave Club. And it's something minor and silly like that, but still, because it's a, there's a market process going on, I'm actually looking into what the companies offer, and I'm making an opinion-based decision because of my reasons.
You were typing furiously during the break. I couldn't even get your attention. And that's, you know, you can wait for a government board to – does the FDA do anything furiously other than outlaw things and
– outlaw things and raid people for breaking those silly rules that they decide themselves because they're a cabinet organization.
Here's the thing. I want to go back to the last segment and really stress I'm not anti-science. I made a comment that sounded like I was. Here's what I think. I think science should be distributed and free in the sense of free software, not necessarily in the sense of no money. But, you know, 1,000 people interested in butterflies in a particular region posting about it on the internet and peer reviewing each other, even if they're not PhDs, maybe if there's a couple people with advanced degree training in there that can interpret it, that is going to produce much better data, much quicker than some government-funded, you know, Congress saying, we have to spend this amount of money on studying the British Columbian dung beetles' mating habits, which, you know, on Fox News, they love to read those. And it sounds anti-science because on Fox News, they find the most ridiculous-sounding studies that government has funded and read them, and they talk about streamlining government and getting rid of these things, where it's really, it's like, that's not the answer. It's like, get rid of government and these things happen anyway. I mean, think about think about Linux, the operating system Linux. It's technically superior to Mac and Windows. It's it doesn't need antivirus protection because it the structure of how it's made, it's not susceptible to viruses.
Right.
And it's better. And you can change it. You don't have to wait for the next iteration to come out. And it's literally free, not only free as in you're free to alter it. It's free. It doesn't cost money. And there are systems in place that have evolved organically for people to go to GitHub or wherever and update their source code and give it away. And people have made this giant system out of zeros and ones without any government help, without any corporate help. And people have made millions of dollars on it too. Like a lot of people do it for free, but there are companies that sell their version of Linux at an enterprise level. And you're not really buying, you're buying a disk, but what you're really buying is like the tech support 24/7 and the people to come administer it and set it up. And it's a booming business, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It reminds me of this tweet I read yesterday by Brian Sovereign. He was quoting a guy named Marco Pierre Bloom or something like that, who said the success of the internet is not because there was one TCP/IP implementation. It's because there were hundreds of them. And this was sort of, I think he was trying to say that altcoins are good, because that was a hashtag that followed in the same conversation, saying that, you know, we don't need to necessarily put all our eggs in one Batman. What makes a system end up emerging as beautiful and elegant and the best is if there's hundreds or thousands of people trying to solve one problem. Obviously, that problem is going to be solved best if there are more people competing to do it, because there won't just be one choice or a dozen choices that people then have to vote on, or two choices that people then have to vote on. The truly the best will emerge as the best because it's obvious to everyone who's involved in the process.
The computer industry, both hardware and software, emerged so quickly and were such a vast leap in knowledge and collective – not collectivist, but collective work across the globe, especially once the internet allowed it, that it kind of got under the radar of the government. And now, you know, 40 years later, the government is scrambling to try to regulate it. If the government – if the governments of the world had regulated the early computer hardware industry and the computer software technology the way they do everything else, computers would still cost millions of dollars, require a team of scientists in lab coats, and, you know, would take the floor of a university, the whole wing of a university, to have the computing power that you have in your chromed robot turret in your pocket now. But because the government didn't know what to do with it, it just happened, man. I mean, they tried to outlaw encryption. If they'd outlawed encryption, and Joe Biden wanted to do that back in the 90s, you would not have Bitcoin. It wouldn't have been able to. Now it's unstoppable, but it wouldn't. It would have been stoppable when they started, because people would have been arrested for experimenting on it.
I'm not 100% sold on that. I think if they did even try to outlaw encryption, they wouldn't have been able to.
Yeah, because there's such a demand for it.
Yeah, and I think that this is kind of the whole point here, or the nugget of it, is that these distributed, decentralized ways of solving problems are way faster, way more efficient, and produce way better results than any kind of top-down hierarchy, planning panel, and central committee type way of making decisions or producing things or even being parasites on things that are produced, that that in the end, the old top-down hierarchical structures are doomed to fail. And so I think no matter what they do, they're toast in the end. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. Albert Einstein developed the theory of relativity as a hobby while working full-time at the patent office.
Right,
basically,
right.
He was so bored.
We know that.
His day job was working in a horrible bureaucracy enforcing the opposite of individual science in the patent office. He was so bored and so smart that he had time to come up with the theory of relativity. You know, the same way most people doodle when they're on the phone at work.
Uh-huh,
he doodled the theory of relativity. Yeah.
Right. So when the lady at the parks office booth at the national park waves you through without searching you or checking your bag because she looks too busy, she may be working on the next great scientific theorem.
No, man. She's playing Angry Squirrels and tweeting with her friends saying, I hate my job, but I love the government. Let me check your bag, sir.
Yeah. No, I think she was actually eating a sandwich. That was a true story, bro. So but yeah, man, I think that and I've been telling people this because I was doing a lot of wedding videography this weekend. I did like 2 gigs and worked dozens and dozens of hours in 2 days. And I was just chatting with people, and you know, I had the same camera I had for the Bitcoin conference. And so I was being a Bitcoin evangelist and saying, man, and they're like, oh, yeah, what do you think about that? Oh, it's kind of neat, you know, thinking it's just like some cool thing out there. And it's like, no, man, this is what's going to change the world. This is the solution to the problem of all the things you guys are upset about, you know, the state beating people up, cops killing people, you know, Monsanto and all these scary things that people talk about. Having decentralized distributed systems and organizing society that way is what's going to keep these giant power structures from doing all the horrible things that people don't want them to do.
There's a thread on the Bitcoin forum. It's called, "Can you see the blockchain being used to register votes in general elections?" And there's a lot of going back and forth on the technology of how that would work. And, you know, it would basically – it would work. You know, it couldn't be gamed the way that the machine voting could. But, you know,
Want that?
Yeah. I said something to the effect of, you know, if you're still voting, you're not really embracing where the blockchain is headed.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with more on that tip after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Meowbit is free software from the Freedom Fiends that allows you to effortlessly view .bit websites. Meowbit works on all browsers. .bit is a new type of web address that's not controlled by any government or corporation. And we'll show you how to register a .bit domain today using a few cents worth of Namecoin. If anyone ever shuts down your .com website, users will still be able to get to your site using your .bit address in our free software, Meowbit. Go to meowbit.com. That's meowbit.com.
It is the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. We are the cheerleaders for the Blockstream economists, or the study of Blockstream economics. I am Nima Vidotti. We've got Michael W. Dean out there in the Wild West. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
It's going good. I have some more teaching hospital don't do as I have done advice. And I had some before a couple years ago or a year ago. We had 3 Bitcoin, and I lost the password, man.
Shame.
Yeah.
Shameful. But
yeah.
That's okay.
And the point is, don't lose your password. Now, I have 2 more teaching hospital examples today. One from me that's equally as stupid, Didn't lose as much money and might get it back. But because that was, I mean, Bitcoin was up to $1,000 when we were trying to, you know, I lost $3,000 of our money. I'll never do that again. You can and should donate to the Fiends. And we'll get it. Nemo will get it. His babies will get it. My programmer will get it if it's for the meow bit. Derek will get it. Here's the thing. I'm about to tell another story that's going to make no one ever want to donate to us again. But, okay. But I do this as a teaching hospital. I suffered so people can learn the lesson. All right.
Yeah.
I was multitasking one day doing 27,000 things like I usually do. And I was sending a guy a name coin, one name coin for doing a little bit of work for me, some translation. And, you know, it was like $4 payment at the time, but it was, you know, it was probably half hour work for him. And it was just, he didn't have any name coin. I wanted to get him involved in it. I was pushing name coin. I still am. And I sent it to him. And then I was working on the Meowbit webpage. And I still had his name coin address on my clipboard, and I thought I copied and pasted mine out of the program, but I guess I didn't press something hard enough. Sometimes you don't press a button hard enough, or sometimes it just doesn't copy and, you know, delete the other thing. I pasted his Namecoin address, thinking it was my Namecoin address, as the donate address for Namecoin. I got the Bitcoin one right, and I appreciate the Bitcoin, and I've been given Derek his share. But I used this guy's for the Namecoin. And I was checking it on blockchain to see, you know, if it got any donations, and it did not for a couple weeks. And then the other day, it got 100 Namecoin anonymously from somebody. The day after we came out with, you know, Derek did the thing that had never been done on the blockchain. I think it was somebody saying, right on, man, good work, sending us 100 Namecoin, which is about $350 right now.
Nice.
It didn't show up in my wallet, and I kept looking at it. I thought it was the problem you had at one point where we restored your wallet from a backup and it fixed a stuck transaction, but I didn't even see it as a stuck transaction. I just didn't see it, and I spent hours updating things and going through backups and trying different things. Still didn't show up at all, not even as incoming. So I searched the I did a global search on my whole computer for that address and found it in my list of people that I had do translations, and it was like, oh man. So I wrote the guy and said, hey, somebody accidentally sent you 100 Namecoin that was meant for me, and you know, finders keepers, you have no ethical obligation to give it back to me, but if you want to be a mensch, here's my Namecoin address. Why don't you keep 20 Namecoin and send me 80, and then I'll give my programmer 75 of them, and I'll keep 5. And the guy was confused. He's like, it's not showing up as coming in. And I'm like, I didn't know he didn't have a wallet. He had an exchange. He had Cripsy. And he wrote me, I wrote him today and asked him if it showed up and if he was going to give us some of it. And he said, here's a screenshot. I'm looking in my Cripsy account, and, you know, over on the right, it says that it's been received, but in his balance, it's not received after 24 hours. So I start Googling, Cripsy balance not showing. And before I finished the word balance, Google autofilled it. So that's how common of a problem this is. I'm not saying anything bad about Cripsy, and exchanges are often giant technological database-driven dynamic sites, and things can take a while, and there can be problems. And they usually, the big ones usually fix the problems quickly. But he's contacted support. Okay, there's a couple lessons here. One is, make sure you're giving out your address, not someone else's address, when you put something on a website or send someone an address. It's very embarrassing to go to somebody and say, I'm stupid, you accidentally got my money, can I have some of it? Right. And this guy's being decent, he's trying to do it, but you know, not everybody would. And it's still just I've spent, you know, 4 hours on this problem so far, and I shouldn't be, and it's my fault. So the second recommendation here is, don't keep your crypto coins in exchanges.
Yes.
Use exchanges to buy and sell coins, but get them out quickly. Keep them in your wallet, on your computer, backed up on multiple hard drives, encrypted with a password you can remember. I was telling people before Mt. Gox went down, owing millions of Bitcoin to people. But since then, it's just inexcusably stupid to have your money kept in an exchange.
We'll have more tips when we get back.
It's defeating the purpose, too.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
Yeah, it's the Freedom Fiends on the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. You can view our archives at freedomfiends.com. You can view our blog. You can view our blog at freedomfiends.com/blog. I'm Nima Vedati. We've got Michael W. Dean on the other end of the interwebs. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
Good. You should always take physical possession of your gold. Don't keep it stored somewhere else where it can be taken or known. Mm-hmm. And always take physical possession of your Bitcoin and Namecoin, yes, and Litecoin, yes, and other crypto coins, and which is kind of funny because you don't really take physical possession of it. It exists on the blockchain distributed, but your control over it can either be on your computer or with some third party. And
right,
I guess the thing with third party is people don't really trust themselves, so they'd rather give it to someone else. But, and I'm saying this, I'm the guy who lost $3,000 worth of Bitcoin because I forgot my password. That'll never happen again. And the other mistake I made will never happen again. So I've made all the mistakes. And, you know, I've trusted someone in that community who probably is never going to pay me the money they owe me. But those are three mistakes I've made once. I will not make them again. And I can attest to other people. No, that guy's going to pay me. But, but yeah, I can attest to, you know, check out who you're doing work with, who you're doing business with. Ask other people about them. Do some due diligence. Keep your cryptocurrencies on your system, backed up on multiple hard drives with encryption, with a good password that's easy to remember. And make sure
you can also give it out, your private keys on a piece of paper and put them in a gun safe if you wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. And also you can't really cold store Namecoin yet. It's kind of a long story, but yeah, you kind of have to keep it alive. It's got to do with the size of the network more than anything. And the wallet itself, but you can do that with Bitcoin for sure.
Namecoin's one of those nascent altcoins.
It's a little beyond nascent altcoin. You're right, but yeah, that is a term someone used. No, yeah. It's an incredible altcoin that kind of has an identity and an organizational problem. And you know, I think the organizational problem is partly that a bunch of people worked on it and, you know, and they complain when new developers come in. They say the new developers don't interact with the community. They ignore the community, the Namecoin community. But it's more like the Namecoin community ignores the developers. Because from personal experience and from people I've talked to who have tried to help out and do things, they're like, yeah, man, I posted this 9 months ago and never got any feedback from you guys, so I just did it, you know?
Yeah, and that's what they should do. They should just
People are busy. They have day jobs. They have spouses. They have kids. They have families. Like, I don't complain about the lack of support, but I'll point it out in any system where if I'm coming in and nobody knows me and I try to say, hey, this is what I'm doing. Anybody got any feedback? And they don't give me any. And then they bash you. You know, this isn't just in cryptocurrencies. This is in anything. You know, there's in a distributed system, you don't have to ask permission. It's polite right to say, hey, I'm doing this. What do you think? But if no one responds, or if they take months to do it and you want to do something now, you just do it, man. That's how open source and free software projects work. And that's how everything is going to work in the future. I'm not just talking about cryptocurrencies. It sounds like I am. But why is this important, and why is this the wave of the future, Nima?
Because if you just do it and people like it, it'll gain wide adoption. It'll be used. And because of that function of it, because of that way that that works, the coolest stuff becomes the most popular. You know, there's that saying, what's popular is not always right. But when things are decentralized and open source and actually are responding to people's needs and desires in the way that markets do, then oftentimes what's popular is what works best, or at least what people want more than anything else. And if the decentralized system can provide that to people, who's to say that that's wrong? I think the what's popular is not always right is more of a saying in the old paradigm, to where the majority can decide to kill people of a certain race or creed.
Oh, it summed up really well, you know, with murder and with taste in bad music. In the show Peep Show, the BBC comedy that I like, somebody's like, two young guys inherit a bar, and they're trying to make it, decide what kind of bar it's going to be, and one wants to make it popular, and the other one wants to make it weird. And the one who wants to make it popular is like, well, people like nuts in bowls on the bar. And the other guy's like, people like Coldplay and voting for the Nazis.
I think it was Nickelback. It was probably
Coldplay. It's England. Coldplay. Man. Okay. Yeah, not Canada, not America. Yeah, and you know, that goes to this thread on the Bitcoin forum of, can you see the blockchain being used to register votes in general? One of the guys who's in favor of being done says, it pains me that we as advanced humans can't even count our votes correctly when voting. The vote systems on this planet. And he says something I can't say on radio, that how horrible they are. And they're completely manipulated. And he goes on for four paragraphs. And I paraphrased him and said, it pains me that advanced humans think we need leaders, you know?
Yeah.
They're trying to use this technology.
We need a central power, and we need to vote. We need to have a decentralized way of voting for centralized power.
Yeah.
How self-defeating and ridiculous is that?
I'm going to type that back to him in the next break. I'll do it right now.
There you go. Yeah, man. Decentralization is the way to go. But, you know, it also comes back to personal responsibility. And if you think that a decentralized DNS system, a top-level domain system, is a great idea, then you can support us, too. You know, go to Meowbit, download it, make sure it works. If you like it, go to CoinJabber. I met one of the guys over there, a couple of the guys over there at CoinJabber, which is like a Yelp for the whole cryptocurrency world. So if you're trying to make sense of whether or not an exchange is legit or not, or a website that sells stuff in altcoins or Bitcoin is legit or not, you can go to coinjabber.com. And Cryptsy, that site you were saying that the guy uses the exchange instead of taking physical delivery of his altcoins, he was on Cryptsy. Yeah. Cryptsy's only got 69% on there. So obviously not the most legit exchange that must be out there. And go down there and write a review, rate Meowbit. Because Meowbit is something that could help to change the world. It could keep the internet more government-proof. Keep your website. I mean, don't even do it as we need this large abstraction to be government-proof. Do it for yourself. Take your own website and put it on a .bit domain and tell people about Meowbit so they can go to your website's .bit domain.
There's a really, really awesome new .bit site, and it's in Poland. And it's really cool. It's all photos of landscapes in Poland, which is pretty cool. I never really knew much about that country. It's called awesomelandscapes.bit. Awesomelandscapes.bit. And if you're on Meowbit and you can view .bit domains, I would really recommend. I spent like an hour on it with my wife yesterday, and she wants to go to Poland now. Your wife is Polish, right?
Yeah, we say that. There? And I guess technically she is, but she's really far removed from any kind of knowing about her Polish heritage.
Well, you should show her awesomelandscapes.bit.
I should. In fact, I will. And that's always interested me too, is here in Merca, people always talk about how beautiful it is and how diverse the landscapes are. And I'm not downplaying that. I mean, they are. We've driven all across the West and seen deserts and coastal paradises. And
Russia and China are as vast and diverse too.
Exactly. That was my point. Is other place, because people will say, oh, no place on Earth is as vast and beautiful as the North American continent between Canada and Mexico.
That's not true.
But it's very nationalistic, yeah, because they probably wouldn't even count Mexico as being beautiful or Canada as being beautiful, but they truly are. There are places in Canada. Canada has the world's only lake on an island within a lake on an island within a lake on an island that nobody's ever been to, but somebody discovered on Google Earth. So the world is beautiful, man. And
that's collective. That's distributed science there. Somebody discovering something on Google Earth, a land feature that's never been
And then Wired
explored.
Writing an article about somebody's discovery on Google Earth, and then it gets tweeted, and then
Boing Boing probably, boinging the Wired article, and then a million people tweeting it, and then someone writing another blog about it. It's totally meta, man.
Somebody writing a blog about it, and then me reading it, and then talking about it on
radio.
Radio
and then somebody
show.
Is going to hear it and tweet it to someone else.
Right.
Yeah. Because radio's not distributed. Like, it's not like they're going to probably go on their radio show. Although there are people with radio shows that listen. Ian Freeman is listening right now. I know he is, because I was just emailing with him.
Oh, man, I lost my point. All right, go on, Michael.
I got points. Yeah, I just wrote back to this guy who wants to fix the voting system with the blockchain. I said, I think it's sad that you want to use a completely decentralized and voluntary system to decide how you install aggression-based centralized leadership.
Ah, amen. Amen to that, man. I mean, yeah, I just don't understand. I don't understand how you can grasp the beauty of the blockchain and still think that the state is relevant at all. But, I mean, obviously I'm biased because I came at it with that preconceived notion. But still, it seems
I'm
to me
amazed,
like
in an even bigger way, because Bitcoin is really young. It's a really young technology. Linux has been around since 91, I think, GNU Linux. And a lot of GNU/Linux programmers and users and advocates. Some of them are ANCAP, some are libertarian, but a lot of them are statists, including two of the three main original developers. Richard Stallman is a socialist. He calls himself that. And he wants laws to protect people from Bitcoin. He's like, Bitcoin is an interesting technology, but I think that the idea of completely decentralized, and I'm like, dude, you spend all day writing people emails telling them how to pronounce and what to call Linux. He says, I don't think the guy programs anymore. I think he just sends emails whenever anyone says Linux and says, call it GNU/Linux to honor my contribution. That's his contribution. He did something amazing, back in the 90s, and now he's just hammering away trying to get credit for it. And then, Linus Torvalds, who Linux is named after, is a kind of he's not as adamantly like socialist as Stallman, but he's a Scandinavian citizen kind of yes, I think the government should pay for our healthcare. It's the fair thing to do. And then there's Eric S. Raymond, who's a gun-toting anarcho-capitalist, basically. Out of three got it. And it's like they built this thing from nothing, man, without any oversight. People did kind of take team leader positions, but they could be overridden. People could do stuff without them. There was no force and no absolute final say. And all these like brilliant worker ants got together and built this thing that's huge and revolutionary. It's huge. It's not as far reaching as where the blockchain will go, but it's bigger than Bitcoin in its scope. How many lines of code it is, how many people worked on it.
Well, I guess what they don't get is they either don't see the gun that all political power rests upon, or they see it and they think that that's a valid, fair thing.
I think it's a combination of both, especially with like people who say we need to use Bitcoin for voting. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Uh-uh. But we'll have more when we get back from this trip to the market.
Voting could be used, in a voluntary system, too.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed.
but they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Ha-ha, it's the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. This is Nima the Daddy out here in the Texas Hill Country. We've got Michael W. Dean. He's either down in the windowsless bunker somewhere, or he's out cruising around the west in the Wormabago, or he's high in the clouds in Airworm 1. Which of those three? Where in the world is Michael W. Dean?
I'm in the blimp, man.
In the blimp. Okay. Airworm 1 it is.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So before that trip to the market, you said voting's not so bad. But what you meant is you did.
Oh, yeah. We kind of got cut off. I was talking about how I'd be absolutely in favor of using the blockchain for voting in non-aggression-based voluntary systems. I don't want there to be voting for leaders who get to decide how to point the machine gun turret on the rotating 360-degree stand of the state at everybody voting does. Mm-hmm. I think that voting in a private sense for voluntary things, not necessarily voting, but deciding and at least taking an inventory of who in this voluntary organization feels which way and then discussing it is an absolutely imperative part of any process that involves more than one person.
Yeah, it really is. And I think Butler Schaefer in Boundaries of Order made the point, too, that, you could completely have voting if it leads to, a voluntarist type of decision. Like if you have consensus-based voting to where, say, you are in some kind of 100 to 1,000 group thing, a homeowners organization or something like that, you don't get to implement any rules or anything with any kind of penalty unless 100% of people agree to it, because then everybody's in favor of it, right? That's what consensus means. So then you can't claim voluntarism if you don't follow the rules because you agreed to it in some kind of contract or with some kind of opt-out thing. Like, I don't want to do that thing that you voted for, so see ya, I'm going to go join this other group over here. Where the state fails those tests is obviously you don't even need a supermajority to implement anything, and the things that get implemented have the force of SWAT teams behind them or the force of drones or tungsten rods from space, depending on where you live geographically. So I think that's also the whole point, man, is what we need in the end is to not have the force of guns pointed at people. And if you can come up with voting that doesn't include that, that doesn't include some kind of central top-down tungsten rod lightning bolt from God kind of thing as the negative consequence, then more power to you, I guess.
Yeah, I think that a really excellent example of how decision-making can work in a voluntary organization is AA. And I'm not talking about necessarily what happens in the recovery meeting, but what happens in the structural business meeting that happens usually once a month after each meeting. And I wrote about this a lot in my book, A User's Manual for the Human Experience, which you can get at my site, michaelwdean.com. And speaking of that site, that's my new radio show, which is 5 nights a week, starting last week, but tonight I do 2 shows on Sundays, and tonight my guest is my co-host for the night is Derek J, and he's always fun. So check that out on LRN or GCN at midnight Central Time tonight. So the way it's done in AA is they do something called a group conscience, which is not really a democracy vote, although basically it's people discuss it, they give the pros and cons of an idea. They're generally kind of respectful about it, although people can get heated. And then they take a vote on it, and then they discuss it more. And basically until either they can reach a near majority, absolutely everyone doing it, or sometimes the loudest guy or the guy that's got the most years clean or sober does it, but makes the decision. But either way, it's what the founder of AA, Bill Wilson, one of the two co-founders, what he described in his book, The 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, also known colloquially as the 12 and 12, he described as a beautiful synergy of anarchy and democracy. And he used that term in the 50s when the word anarchy was even scarier than now. That's when, Joe McCarthy, Stalin McCarthy was rounding people up for not taking pledges to, loyalty oaths to America.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think the problem is that modern democracy has become nothing more than a justification, a rubber stamp, if you will, for fascism and socialism and tyranny of all stripes.
A future auction for stolen goods, as someone called every election.
Exactly, exactly. And if you enjoyed this episode, go to freedomfiends.com. You can listen to any of the episodes and keep worming on, fiends.
Worms!
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FREEDOMFEENS.com.